Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's the Round Ball Rock Podcast, starring Dave Schilling, Michael Milken, Ivan Volsky, Joey Devine, Michael DeGuzman, Richard Whitney, Bernard Evers, Sean Keane, Bernie Madoff, Patreons, Silky Johnson, thank you Silky, Max Stanley Williams, thank you Max, musical guest, new Riders of the Purple Sage, and now the temporary host of Round Ball Rock, Joey Devine!
Hi, it's me, Joey Devine, your temporary host of the Round Ball Rock Podcast, and we are back with a brand new episode. That, I'm going to say, is a big one, Sean, wouldn't you?
Oh, it's a big one.
That, yeah, of course, is full-time, permanent co-host of the podcast, Sean Keane. Sean, how are you today?
I'm good, doing well.
Before we get to our guest and the return of a fan favorite feature, I just want to say, shoot us an email at roundrockpod@gmail.com or tweet us at us at roundrockpod, patreon.com/roundrockpod. Is, of course, our Patreon if you feel like supporting us that way. You can also support us non-monetarily by just giving us 5-star reviews. It's weird they only let you give 5-star reviews on iTunes, but it's true. Mm-hmm. They only let you give 5-star reviews on iTunes.
It's crazy, but it's true.
As for, look, things are hard right now. We've been talking about it a lot. So I have picked a new charity for us to encourage people to donate to that this week. That is, of course, SELAH, S-E-L-A-H, which works with homeless communities. And we would, especially in Los Angeles, excuse me, and you can donate to them or just donate time or stuff at SELAH. NHC.org. And if you don't want to do Los Angeles, find a homeless outreach program in your city that isn't fake or full of scumbags and donate to them. Sean, we have a big guest this week.
We do.
Yeah. This is, I would say, one of the godfathers of NBA blogging, correct?
Absolutely. It's interesting. We've occasionally, I would say this is comparable to the first time we had Kelly Dwyer on, where it almost freaks me out a little bit to be talking to somebody that I've been reading for, you know, more
half
than
your
a
life.
Decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. yeah, we're both big fans. He's like, it's rare to have like a basketball writer and you can say like, oh, this guy's a pioneer. Mm-hmm. This guy's a pioneer.
Yeah. We are, of course, talking about Mr. True Hoop himself, Henry Abbott. Henry, on truehoop.com this week, put out an extensive timeline of the Tillman Fertitta family history. And we realized, we've got to do a Tillman time. And it actually has to be good this time. So we brought Henry in. Sean, it's Tillman time.
It's Tillman time. That's right. Texas Tillman, Trump supporter, state house man, and billionaire buyer. Houston Rockets motherfucker. Tillman time.
How does Tillman describe himself?
A motherfucker.
All I do is win, win, win.
Tillman time.
All right, it's a big one here. An extended Tillman time with one of my favorite basketball writers of all time. We have from True Hoop, Henry Abbott. Henry just wrote a giant piece on the family history of one of our podcast favorite guys, Tillman Fertitta. Here he is, Henry Abbott. Henry, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing great. I've got to say, I've been learning a lot about the Galveston mob. And I sort of regret starting a segment of a podcast where we solely make fun of the fail son of the Galveston mob.
It's a hell of a story. It really is. It's funny. I thought, like, you know, you don't often hear these kinds of allegations, right? And when you do, you usually, like, as a reporter, just it ends up being unreportable. I didn't know that everybody knew this except for me. I didn't know that, like, every issue of Texas Monthly apparently has a rundown of the history of the Galveston mob and the Fertitta family. I didn't, it's just like, and everyone from Houston and Galveston emailed me like, yeah, bro, we've known this for 100 years. and everyone outside of Galveston and Houston is like, oh my God, this is insane. So it's the weirdest secret non-secret I've ever encountered in my life.
Yeah, we mentioned it. We have a recurring feature called Tillman Time.
Which is currently on.
The actual exact it's happening right now.
Feels kind of nowish, yeah.
And I was shocked to learn about it, and I had the same impression. Like I just saw someone make a reference to it, and I started looking it up, and it was just so open that it was like, yeah, you know, his cousin was skimming money off this casino. Everyone knows that, and it was incredible. Like I thought I would. I said it almost jokingly, and then learning more about it, it was like, oh no, this is a well known established mafia family, and he's still in the same city throwing a giant Tony Soprano style Cinco de Mayo party every year.
And they made the movie Casino about it.
Yeah.
All right, so before we get deeper into your amazing article available on truehoop.com, let's talk about how Sean and I started talking about Tillman. So I worked at the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company for 8 years and was there when Tillman Fertitta purchased it. And the first thing he did was start charging us all $5 for the right to have an employee discount. Mm-hmm. It was a $5 charge a month.
The discount upcharge.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. He would charge us $5 a month to have an employee discount, which at the time was infuriating. But now that I learn that he's a member of the mafia, makes total sense. It's like a protection shakedown.
Yeah, you are protecting your shift meal. Well, also, it's like this is it feels very Tillman Fertitta. It's a restaurant that's on the wharf.
Mm-hmm.
Salvatore and Rosario Maceo, is that how you say it? Maceo?
I don't know.
I think it's Maceo.
Yeah,
Maceo.
That would be my guess.
Okay. I don't know for sure. Maceo. But...
but they had a fish company as one of their legitimate businesses, so it made a lot of sense.
Somewhere I read that part of the business analysis here was that you can get a piece of salmon, the same piece of salmon that if you try to sell it next to the freeway, you charge $8 for it. But if you're next to water, you can charge $20 for the same exact fish. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of his businesses are near the water, which was means one of the bond investors was like, he's incredibly vulnerable to climate change.
Well, and if you connect that piece of salmon to an Academy Award winning movie starring Tom Hanks, you can charge, plus it's next to water, you can charge $35.
Joey, did you always have to ask trivia questions about Forrest Gump at every table?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we definitely had to do that. In fact, I would say that part loosened after Tillman took over. But the second thing he made us all start doing is trying to sell our tables Landry's cards, which are essentially casino player cards, but for Landry's own restaurants.
What do you mean? I'm confused.
Like, I forget how much it was. It was like $20 or something. But you got like bonus points. It might have been free. I don't remember. But it was like bonus points that you could, if you went to Houston's and then the Rainforest Cafe, they would like give you, you know, a suite at the Rainforest Cafe if you spent enough money. The other thing he did is, so this was in San Francisco, and San Francisco at the time had started. They were offering health care for anyone who worked in San Francisco. So most restaurants would just post like a little thing on their menu that was like, hey, this is 20% more because we're adding health care to we have to pay health care for anyone who works in the city. But Tillman,
but generally it was like a dollar on each.
Yeah,
charge.
It wasn't even that. It wasn't much. Even. Yeah. Yeah. But Tillman Fertitta was so infuriated by this, he actually threatened to close all of his restaurants in the city of San Francisco because he said he couldn't charge people more, even though it cost nothing. It was basically a tax that the diner was paying. It cost him nothing. But he's just so against poor people getting health care that it infuriated him. So when he bought the Rockets, this predates him buying the Rockets by like 7 years, and I had determined this man was my lifelong enemy. And then I had a basketball podcast, and he bought the Houston Rockets.
He had it coming, basically.
Exactly. Yeah,
he pissed off the wrong guy.
It's a person. This is about revenge for me, not morals.
Yeah, yeah. That's very mafia.
Yeah. Yeah, you're whole that you have a life grudge against him.
Yeah.
So, let's talk with you, Henry, about where you started with the Tillman Fertitta thing. Like, you said it was an open secret that only you didn't know that he's a fourth-generation mafia man. Where did you first hear said open secret? Well, not. I don't want you to burn any sources or anything, but how did you start digging into the Fertitta family?
Well, so I had written some stuff about other owners, right? Mm-hmm. I wrote this big Prokhorov series, and so I had, and a few other things. I had kind of a reputation as like a anti-owner guy. Mm-hmm. I don't feel anti-owner. I feel like we should report on owners, like,
yes,
we do on
players
and stuff. But so somebody, somehow that gets you on the phone with like a friend or people who want to wax poetic about this or that. But I ended up on the phone with like some guy casually used the phrase fourth generation member of a mafia family. He said it very casually, as if like it wasn't a weird thing to say. But I was, of course, stopped dead in my tracks by this. It just wasn't what I expected. So I was like, wait, what? And he's like, oh, yeah, look it up, like that kind of thing. So I did what any good aggressive reporter would do, which is I just sat on it for like 6 months and just forgot to do anything about it. And then at some point I was like, you know, I should look that up. And like, if you look at the article, I didn't really write anything. I just You just research on newspapers.com, and these are just the things. Like, if you have a subscription to Texas Monthly, you know all of this. Like, it's been reported again and again and again, including earlier this year in Texas Monthly. Mm-hmm. Just all of this incredible family history. And just to be super clear, like, I didn't come across anyone saying, you know, maybe you did, but saying that Tillman Fertitta is currently a mobster.
No, we just say that because we have death wishes.
That's great. I mean, I'm happy for you.
No, but basically, it's just that it is interesting that somebody who is a completely legitimate businessman who intentionally tries to work, again, on the waterfront all mm-hmm. the time and has also entered the casino business, mm-hmm. That there's nothing at all to do with coming from a family that used to operate illegal casinos in Galveston, Texas.
I guess go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go.
I just want to make it clear, when we say he's in the mafia, we're of course talking about the CNBC mafia led by Lou Dobbs and Jim Cramer.
I thought you guys meant like the mafia.
That
makes a lot of sense. Inarguable. It seems to me also like one thing I've been reflecting on Tillman Fertitta somewhat as I'm say gardening or taking my dog for a walk, and this is a weird thing to think about, but I know you know what I'm talking about, but one of the things is like, okay, let's say he's clean. Let's say that mm-hmm. he's from this family. No one can help where they were born. And he just now runs a stage of steakhouses and shrimp companies and whatever. And wouldn't it make sense to just repudiate the mob?
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with this, wouldn't you just do the most incredible job of saying, like, I was so pissed at my uncle, cousin, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, never wanted to do that. And this is why I signed this decree here on this day in Houston or whatever. But there's been... There's nothing like that. I haven't seen anything like that.
No, it feels like instead he's buying up tons of property in his family's old mafia stronghold mm-hmm. and trying very hard to get gambling there.
And giving tons of money to the police.
Yeah. really a lot of money to the police.
And, and I don't know. Like, I don't know what to make of that. Like, I heard about that actually long before I heard about his family history. And I was like, oh, that's weird, I guess. Like, I think Mark Cuban gives as much money to the police, too. It isn't necessarily ringing an alarm bell for me.
Well, he's in the broadcast.com mafia, so it's okay.
That would mean, yeah, that makes sense. But going back and reading, I wonder if I can find this. Hold on. I'm going to cite an actual source.
All right. I'll get a joke off real quick.
This might be the first time on this podcast, by the way.
thinking about Mark Cuban giving a lot of money to the police makes me think, oh, yeah, I guess Shark Tank sort of is like the mafia, where they're like, yeah, I'll give you this money for 20% of your business for the rest of your life.
You got to take this offer right now. We'll leave it.
Basically, here's the deal. Now I'm reading from Gary Cartwright in Texas Monthly, and he's saying that basically this is now talking about 100 years ago. Walter Johnston, the longtime police commissioner, bragged he was on the payroll of 46 whorehouses. This is all in Galveston. Mm-hmm. Frank Biondi, who was the sheriff of Galveston from 33 to 57, explained to State Investigative Committee that the reason he had never raided the Balinese was because it was a private club and he was a member. Occasionally, the Texas Rangers, in those days effectively the governor's private police force, swept down from the mainland and smashed a few slot machines. But not one of Maceo's clubs was ever closed for long. The skinny was that the family had close contacts in the governor's office by which they were warned of approaching trouble. Gambling paraphernalia at the Balinese was designed to convert into billiard and bridge tables, so that by the time the Rangers arrived, all they found were some well-dressed patrons playing bridge and sipping soft drinks.
That seems so cartoonish to
America
me.
America was that so is like cool. An alarm what a cool up. Country.
Just them turning the tables over and like, nope, just playing billiards here.
You have to do it in a voice, right? They can't possibly have spoken in normal voices when the Rangers are right. Heck no! Like, you know, yeah.
excuse me. Sean, You wrote a little outline here for us to go over. Why don't you you and Henry walk us through some of the things that stuck out to you?
So I was impressed, and this seems like something that Tillman would normally brag about, that Galveston had the most prostitutes per capita in the world. And that seems like a stat that would maybe come up on Billionaire Buyer.
Do you remember the number? One hooker for how many Galveston residents?
It was something like one for 61, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Here it is. Chicago was only one for every 430. Paris, a joke, at one to 481. And Shanghai, one to 130. So yeah, Galveston.
Wow.
The worldwide capital. So the original guys are... there's not a Fertitta until it's... I think his grandmother marries one of the guys. Is that... Let me look at the family tree real quick.
It's pretty cool. For sure, like the early days of Galveston mob, as discussed in Texas Monthly and others, was primarily Maceos.
That's right.
And then, which are not in this family tree. But one of the Maceos married his great grandfather, Joseph Francis Fertitta. Mm-hmm. But then all of these, many of the next generation were integrated into the Maceos of running Galveston. And then when the Maceos got busted by the Rangers, the Fertittas took over. But I think it wasn't as lucrative anymore. And then some of them moved to Vegas.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And basically everyone who is a Frank Jr. or a Frank the Third or Frank Three Sticks Fertitta.
Yes. Yes.
Those guys are all involved in some level of casino operation. Like I'm not totally sure how rich you have to be able to start and operate a casino in an above the board way. Because there's Frank, this is Frank Fertitta Jr. The legend is he works his way up from being a pit boss and working. I mean, I guess something being a dealer before that, and opens a casino on the strip, which I guess is designed for casino employees. So it was like a little bit off the strip in the desert, but
is this the Palace Station? Frank? Yeah. Well, you know, Sean, the big claim to fame for the Palace Station, right?
What is that?
That's where OJ got arrested for kidnapping those memorabilia guys.
Oh,
that was
at
the Palace Station. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that. That's so cool.
The other thing about the Palace Station is, weirdly, there's a restaurant in the Palace Station. I don't know what they do, but it's like David Chang's favorite place to eat in Las Vegas. They do like... a weird, it's like a some kind of Asian oyster thing, because they catered to DJ to the dealers and stuff, so it's like Vietnamese food or something like that.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay,
yeah,
yeah. And I guess the idea is that they basically not very profitable to be bribing everybody and having illegal gambling when there's a giant city with legal gambling. Starting in, you know, the '50s, basically. So yeah, they're dealers and everybody leaves. But before that, they basically are running these casinos, running whorehouses, bootlegging, and then they have a vigilante group called Rose's Night Riders.
Oh God! I'm sure they weren't racist at all.
Well, and there's a little whisper of slavery. Galveston was a slavery port,
yeah,
and it doesn't connect to the Fertittas directly that I could see, but like the three families that ran the island before the Maceos and Fertittas were definitely involved in like cotton and banking. And this is where Juneteenth happened, was in Galveston, because was where you would go. Like that's the boat sailed up there to say, hey, we're stopping slavery.
Yeah. A lot of slavery adjacent businesses.
Yeah.
So yeah, the one that was, I mean, that one, and so, yeah, the Fertittas take over, and I get the argument that this, you know, what happened in the 1920s or the 1930s, that doesn't necessarily affect what's happening now. But the Frank Fertitta thing is in the 70s.
It's not really that long ago. And apparently the implication is he's basically he gets to have this casino because he's staked by the Kansas City mob. And he's working with a guy who's developed this very sophisticated way of skimming off the casinos for the mob.
Very cool.
Which, again, we're very much like the movie Casino again.
Yeah. I mean, that is legit. Like that, what's his name? Nicholas Pileggi, right? Like,
yeah.
He apparently interviewed all these people, and this is the Argent Corporation. And I guess it's like, of all the mafia things that have happened in Vegas, this is the one that was really documented. And the people, because this guy, Carl Thomas, right? Carl Thomas was. Yeah. He ratted on everybody, and all those people went to prison. So it's the one, like, actually, there's the Mob Museum in Vegas has a podcast where they, with the Las Vegas Review Journal, and they tell these mob stories. This is the one that they go really deep on, because it's the one where you can't get sued for talking about it, because it's like the best established one. Like, they go way into detail. And, but interestingly, like, Carl Thomas ratted on every single person involved. Imagine this. Like, it's the Chicago crime family, the Kansas City, the two other cities, and the, you know, the people in Vegas itself. But he wouldn't say – he pled the fifth on the matter of Fertitta.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, but it sounds scary. Right?
Yeah. It's very intimidating. and so his son is still the CEO of Station Casinos, which I guess is a chain. There's a bunch of them, but
I went to the movies at Texas Station last time I was in Vegas because I ran out of money the last day I was there.
Was it nice?
No, it was not nice at all. They're pretty dingy, I would say. They're off. For the most part, they're sort of off, even, like, so in downtown, I think it's not Palace, it's the other one. There's, like, Palace Station, there's, like, California Station, I think is the one that's, like, off of downtown, even, like, they're not even where, like, the nice casinos are, but they're...
They just came out of bankruptcy, and they're actually, I think there are lawsuits about it, because the debtors were like, whoa, now this is, like, the... I think it's even one more generation down. But they're basically like, these guys just trying to use the bankruptcy to get a bunch of debt and keep control at a disadvantage to us, the investors. So
yeah,
everybody's pissed. Yeah,
it's very shady because they take the place they take the company private, you know, with just like a huge amount of debt assumed, and they're bankrupt like 2.5 years later. And they owe all these people money. And
well, isn't basically Tillman trying to do that with Caesars currently, constantly? Isn't he always trying to buy Caesars with his weird leveraged debt money?
Yeah, he wasn't able to do it in his last attempt, but it's weird because he's incredibly leveraged with the Rockets, too. Mm-hmm. He bought the team for $2.2 billion. I don't totally understand how it worked to sell bonds in the Rockets, but that's, you know, high level banking stuff. But he basically bought a team for $2.2 billion by putting $300 million down.
Yeah, that's a weird deal. And there's some Deutsche Bank money in there.
Who also is a giant investor in the Station's Casino Corporation now.
Oh, really?
They own like 25% of it. And eventually... They had another, I don't know how you have like a second IPO, but maybe you can do it after you've gone through bankruptcy. But they had an IPO about 4 years ago. So now you can actually buy stock in the Station's Casino chain on the New York Stock Exchange, which seems very questionable. And also Frank Fertitta III also owns the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to bring up, which, I would say the beginnings of Ultimate Fighting, it's more legitimate now, but the beginnings of it, it was like, yeah, of course, you're in the mob, you own casinos, and boxing has gotten a little too clean, so you've got to create another sport you can fix constantly.
Well, and it used to be very underground and also a very, very wharf friendly business.
Yeah. Wharf friendly.
It actually
that's not a real word. You can wharf.
It actually started out. They would pay the seals to fight each other.
Wait, really?
No.
Sometimes I can't tell if I'm on a mob podcast or a comedy podcast. Yeah.
But the reason they were able to make a killing with UFC is that Lorenzo Fertitta used to be in the Nevada State Athletic Commission. And so until 2001, you couldn't get licensed for an ultimate fight in Nevada. But once Fertitta basically used his connections, they suddenly got sanctioned and it became so much more lucrative.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
Because they could start doing pay-per-views and just, you know, they could have matches at casinos, which is the ideal for fights, I guess.
So the central question for me was like, why would this in a league that actually does have a lot of people lining up to pay $2.2 billion for the Rockets, like why would they pick this owner?
Mm-hmm.
Just seems such a weird choice. And an earlier draft of the story had several paragraphs that I ended up deleting because it just seemed kind of weird. But you know, here's my guess. Based on nothing. This is 2017. In 2016, the NBA became really actively involved in, you know, the effort to legalize sports gambling in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
And I think in 2017, they approved someone with good connections in that industry, right? And then in 2018, they got the Supreme Court ruling. And now they're really hoping to cash in and have, like, you know, a big amount of income from legalized sports gambling in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe Tillman's whatever, I don't know exactly what he would be offering here, but his experience in the gambling world might actually be something that appeals to the other owners.
Oh, yeah, boy. And I mean, especially if they ever want to start expanding their efforts in Las Vegas, it's probably very nice to have connected people at the top levels of, you know, the athletic commissions.
Is there any way we can get Jordan Belfort to own a team?
Why not?
The Timberwolves of Wall Street.
Yeah, it's a weird old world, man. I mean, I just like basketball, and I was like, let me just like cover this sport that I like. And next thing you know, I'm like, I'm learning about the craziest. Like, I've learned a lot about Deutsche Bank. You know what I mean? I'm like, why do I have to know about Deutsche Bank to like basketball? Like, what's the deal? Like, but I feel like I'm cheating. Like, if I don't look into it, right? It's like we should know who runs the dang sport at some point.
Right. Man. That's the weird thing to me. I mean, you probably don't actually want to talk about this very much, but I do think there's a certain strain in basketball reporting now where
total and complete horseshit. Is that what you were going to say?
I was going to say, yeah, but I was going to say where access matters more than facts. So you kind of don't report stuff in fear of being able to tweet out a trade 2 days before it happens. Maybe. I mean, I'm not pointing at someone specifically. I'm just saying, it seems to me that there are some, how do I put it, lines being blurred a little bit, but you don't have to say anything, Henry, because I'm sure you don't want to offend any of your friends.
No, come on, I am clearly on one side of this. Like, it makes me sick, to be totally honest. Like, it's an epidemic. It used to be like an annoyance, and now it's a little bit like Hollywood media, right? Mm-hmm. So in Hollywood media, you basically need to go sit in George Clooney's house or whatever. And if you can't, then you're garbage.
And you have to talk about what he ate for lunch. It's like, oh, he had a salad with a shallot vinaigrette.
And the interior decoration is really cool, let's be honest.
Yeah.
not too much. You know, it's tasteful. Yeah. So there's this, you know, Clooney, if someone are in the chain of getting to Clooney's living room, someone says like, oh, hey, of course you're not going to mention like blank, right? Then boy, you have a hard choice to make there. Or maybe you don't have a hard choice. But you say, oh, of course, right? So I've been in this situation a million times. And you have to, you know, there's – now we're going to talk weird media theory crap. But, like, I have described this – I used to be in charge of all the people at ESPN to comic over the NBA, right? And mm-hmm. I said, look, it's a three-party negotiation. Like, it's you, the source, and the readers who are not in the room, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so you have to – you know, you can't forget them, right? Well –
Look, I think we're forgetting them.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Like,
we have a job to do there. And I wrote memos about this. Like, it would be unethical if they leaked, but if somebody leaked them, I'd love that. You know, yeah, I'm 100% worried about this sports media industry. I think I can make a case that as of 2020, we don't really cover the league in the sense that, like, Thomas Jefferson talks about the role of the media in, like, you know, being this important part of how things run. Like, I don't know if the league's really even covered that way. Like, Adam Silver's talked for 22 total minutes since the pandemic started and made all these decisions. And like pretty much the media is just like, well, they said they got it. You know, they're good. Like, we're all set. So we're good. Like, that's not how it's supposed to work. You know, we're also in a golden age of journalism outside of sports where, you know, some of these things that are happening at The Atlantic or The New York Times are just incredible, I think. But
we actually have Ken Klippenstein coming on tomorrow to tell us about FOIA requests.
I love that kind of stuff. Yeah.
We're going to see if we can make a FOIA request to see if that lottery was fixed. The famous frozen envelope. That's what we're literally talking to Ken for.
We're trying to figure out what could possibly expose an NBA conspiracy just via the magic of the Freedom of Information Act.
I did one once for blanking on. I sent in like three or four for just like players from the first 50 years of the NBA,
mm-hmm.
and ended up getting a ton of stuff back.
That like, rules.
That's awesome.
Wilt Chamberlain had a huge FBI file.
Of course,
that is not a surprise. Wow.
Yeah. It's pretty boring, but they were definitely like keeping tabs on Wilt Chamberlain. Like, oh my gosh.
They were like, actually, he only had sex with 9,000 women.
joke. I think I may have dragged you off of your outline, though. I don't want to.
No, you're good.
No, that's great.
This is perfect. So the one thing Sean and I. So we used your other. Another one of your articles about billionaires being problematic. Go ahead, Sean.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you want to ask?
Can I ask one more? Sorry, I just have one more Tillman question that I want to ask before we move on. It seems crazy that this guy has been cash poor for so long. And I don't totally understand how the vetting process works in the NBA. Obviously, I think that gambling angle is legit. And maybe it's because he's been a minority owner of the Rockets for so long. But he was getting sued 30 years ago for, you know, being $10 million in debt. and now he still seems like he's in a giant amount of debt. And it, for whatever reason, there doesn't seem to be any pressure except among, you know, annoyed Rocket fans who want them to pay the luxury tax. It doesn't seem like a lot of people think that is a big problem. And hey, first feels off, like it's Sean, a pretty big problem.
He's willing to pay the luxury tax. It's just an accident that they keep getting out of it.
Yeah, they keep forgetting. They keep forgetting. I also want to mention that just for the times we're in right now, Tillman Fertitta was a Tiger King as well. He owned a bunch of white tigers that were in the Galveston Park.
I do want to ask a question about Fertittaville. There was a place called Fertittaville. That's my question.
No, I think that's a youth. I think they were just worried that Galveston was he was owning too much of it.
Okay. Just making sure.
I think
sure.
That's all.
Yeah. But it is kind of the description does seem like it's like Pottersville in It's a Wonderful Life. You know, just like lots of casinos.
Did you see somebody like when I tweeted out this story, like one of the responses was like, I went there and it was totally trashy. didn't like it. Like the 8, like F+ on the architecture was basically the review. But I respect that. So to your point about he's, you know, been cash poor for a long time, it is a great question. I have had a conversation with a guy who's a current investor in an NBA team, and he said to me that he thinks the way the NBA rules are now, private ownership might be done. Meaning, like, well, the specific reason, because the NBA has changed the rules to make it so that basically everyone has to be Steve Ballmer. The price will be super high, you know, which we just know. But then they want one clear majority owner who can actually pay for it without, like, pay cash for it. And there just aren't that many people left who have that kind of money.
Well, and they refuse to sell to Larry Ellison. So that
knocks another one out. Why did they refuse that? I don't know. What's the deal there?
Well, he's a jerk, but I don't know. Who knows?
Who isn't a jerk? Exactly. Come on.
Every billionaire's a jerk.
Yeah. But somehow this guy who has, like, as you said, he put in, is it $300 million? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
$300 million, yeah.
Like, that's not supposed to happen. Yeah.
Especially when he was also borrowing almost $300 million from the guy he was buying the team from.
And just to be clear, like, the reason this is supposed to be like this, right, is they want one clear decision maker. But if Tillman Fertitta owes somebody $1 billion and it's secured by the Rockets, then, like, and this person could, for all we know, be, you know, off whatever offshore money comes from, right? There's, like, Deutsche Bank, who knows, right? Like, this, there are people out there who could conceivably pick up the phone and call Tillman and tell him what to do, which means the NBA's board of governors is being influenced outside the room, right? Which is not what you want, right? So there are very good reasons. This is the kind of stuff, right? I mean, it's a different level of the game, but this is why Sally Yates freaks out when she sees the transcripts of Michael Flynn telling Ambassador Kislyak that, like, they'll relax the sanctions, blah, blah, blah. Like, the reason is, like, now Flynn isn't representing the U.S. anymore because the Russians know this happened and they can make him do stuff, right? Like, anyway, so yeah. So Tillman's, like, you know, they don't want people in debt. And they've had other structures, like in Milwaukee, there are, or in Golden State, right? There are really two primary owners,
right?
Or in Philadelphia. And that's the other way you'd get around the high price, but it's problematic, right? This is a marriage that can go awry.
I would argue, at least using Golden State, it would be less problematic because then there could only be one owner to shove a player during a finals game.
I would also say that it seems somewhat dangerous that you've got so many guys from private equity firms, but a lot of guys that just specialized in buying things that are undervalued and kind of loading them up with debt and stripping them of their assets. Like, that also feels like not the mentality you want for a league owner necessarily. And that's probably, like, six of the 30 owners have that background. It's like the Pistons, the Hawks, the Sixers, there's more, but yeah. Just it's an odd, I know they're rich enough, I know they're billionaires, but when you look at the things they buy and that it's sort of like a, you know, Josh Harris is a master of buying junk bonds and then basically taking companies into bankruptcy and bringing them out and making them a little more valuable. But that seems not ideal that the guy's really good at navigating bankruptcy, you know?
Or, like, stripping things for parts to sell for money.
Right.
Like, that's the opposite as a fan of what you'd want your owner to do to your basketball team.
Yeah.
Although, like, how much is it worth? Like, so let's say that you're, you know, David Stern in that case. And you're like, yeah, that's a little worrisome. But they're paying, like, 30% more, 40%. At some point, you're like, okay. Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah, totally. Well, and you're helping the guy who's already in the club exit, you know, in the owner's club. Yeah. So it's interesting how many owners are associated, speaking of private equity, that are associated with Michael Milken's old firm.
Oh, like, I love that you're bringing this up. This is, like, my favorite topic right here.
This is, like, I was shocked when we were looking into it. So we were inspired. We did an episode, very, very speculative, not serious at all, just speculating what owners hypothetically might have flown on a plane with Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah.
And
not a plane, the plane.
The plane. The plane. But again, just allegedly, speculatively, we don't know anything mm-hmm. about it. But a lot of people that are now NBA owners are affiliated with, well, a lot of them directly work for this firm, Apollo Global Management. But all of these people came out of this firm called Drexel Burnham Lambert, which you would know, which is famous for junk bond king Michael Milken.
Mm-hmm. Who I've delivered Chinese food to, weirdly.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Well, to what his did he house. Order? It was like a standard, your standard, like, you know, Americanized Chinese food. It's like...
That doesn't sound like Michael Milken at all. I think you're at the wrong house. Like, that sounds completely wrong.
I mean, I think it was for the help, if I'm being honest. I think it was for the security guard being outside. But it was Michael Milken's house in Beverly Hills. I'm going to say second worst person I've ever delivered Chinese food to. The first, of course, being Gene Simmons from Kiss. All right.
Yeah, so Michael Milken's whole thing was basically figuring out a way to do securities fraud on a very massive scale in the late 80s, and their old firm, Drexel Burnham Lambert, ended up just dissolving, basically, in the wake of, I think it had to do with the massive fines they got, but it doesn't seem like it really affected any of the other people that were, like, no one's been tainted by their association, which to me is also weird. Mm-hmm. But maybe a lot of people on Wall Street kind of don't really think Michael Milken did anything wrong. That's what I assume, because he seems to have not had trouble coming back into society, and he's like on baseball telecasts all the time with his cancer charity. Basically, guys from Drexel Burnham started Apollo Global Management, which is where Josh Harris works. And then the Hawks owner, Anthony Ressler, was also a Drexel Burnham guy who co-founded Apollo with this guy named Leon Black, who's married to Ressler's sister. And this guy was specifically known as Michael Milken's right-hand man.
Well, wasn't Leon Black also specifically known for being Jeffrey Epstein's best friend?
He was working with Jeffrey Epstein until at least 2015. He donated $10 million to some Epstein foundation then. And it seems like they were basically continuing to communicate. And the firm denies that they did anything but listen to his tax strategy recommendations, mm-hmm. but it's pretty shady. Also, the crazy Leon Black has a crazy background. His father used to run the United Fruit Company when it was called United Brands. Joey, do you know anything about the United Fruit
Company? I do not. Henry, do you?
Yeah. Oh, I love this topic. Yeah, so just keep talking though, so you can get sued, not me.
Right. There's just like a litany of crazy stories about just mistreating banana farmers basically in Central America.
Wait, can I tell this part? Okay, it's about this. So like legit, no question, well documented. Like the CIA did a lot of things through United Fruit.
Yes, yes.
Well, it sounds like a CIA fake company name, so you know, just like the laziest possible. Yeah. United Fruit. It's a fruit company. Who cares?
Uh-huh. But yeah, they're basically like using the power of business. They basically did like overthrow governments in Central America, right. I think a tremendous number of people who worked in the White House had like previously worked at United Fruit and this kind of stuff. I think it's and then my understanding is that Eli Black, Leon Black's dad, like was a clever investor and bought this big company, thinking, you know, from whoever ran it when it was really active, to say he took it over and found it to be not what it seemed to be, found it to be not as successful as he thought it was, and was starting to feel the pinch of the financial decisions he'd made, and then
leapt out of a window that some people think he couldn't have possibly broken with his briefcase, which is a story of what he did. But anyway, so something happened. He had a unfortunate jumping out of like the 40th story window of the Pan Am building in Manhattan.
Death. It's apparently the inspiration for that scene in Hudsucker
Proxy. I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah. And so he, the company was worth way less than it seemed to, possibly because, I don't know, it was being used as kind of a CIA front. That seems plausible. But also, he got caught bribing some government official in Honduras, like I think it was like $1.25 million. So it was either the worthlessness of the company or the impending federal investigation. So this is, I mean, it's so weird to me that people just sort of like, well, you know, I guess his dad had a rough day. And like that it, I don't know, that this guy is, again, a very trusted financial guy, despite all of these very questionable associations with people, like famous criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and they, you know, and not to get too crazy, but the Russia Direct Investment Fund, right? So this is the Kirill Dmitriev, who's the guy who was at the secret meeting in the Seychelles with Eric Prince, right? Kirill Dmitriev went to like Stanford Business School. He's a really brilliant guy, but he's like, you know, like a tightly affiliated with the Kremlin guy. He forms this Russia Direct Investment Fund. The idea is to kind of like make a lot of Putin affiliated investments that are like respectable and above board. And they end up kind of putting together this international panel of superstar investors. And it's one of them is Leon Black. Another one, I think I'm right in saying is the boss co-founder of one of the 76ers current owners, right? Mm-hmm. And the other boss is Steven Schwarzman, who's also on the Russia Direct Investment Fund, right? So,
oh my God, yeah.
So that's, I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. But and I'll tell you one other thing is when Apollo was formed, Drexel Burton Lambert got it, it's the only, at that time, I think maybe still, it's the only Wall Street like bank that's ever gone out of business. And
Michael Milken went Solomon to prison.
Brothers, basically. Oh, okay. Solomon Brothers. Yeah, right. So, and then the people were cast adrift. They're very talented. They had done, you know, Michael Milken is a genius and did figure out a bunch of stuff. And they had a sort of a system going, right, where they would like one guy was raising a bond issue and they would get the rest of the posse to invest in it and they'd overinvest. So they'd have kind of too much money. Then they get you invest in the next one and on and on and on. And through very clever methods and super hard work and everything. But they were now seen as pariahs for a little while. But Leon Black was unique in that he had better connections and somehow quickly was able to raise a bunch of money for what's now Apollo Global and was then Apollo Global too. And that was like the key thing. And so the ones who were on the Apollo train now have risen to this, like Apollo is just a behemoth now.
Yeah.
So I think that was like the key moment. Like, where did this money come from? Right. And then these people who were, it seems like there was a moment there where the key skill on Wall Street became raising vast amounts of money from not the traditional sources.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's so we almost get that. While we were doing this connecting, besides Apollo, and so that's the Hawks and the Sixers, right, Sean? We also... Yes.
I want to mention the other Sixers owner just real quickly. He's also affiliated with Wes Edens from the Bucks. He has a very similar company called the Blackstone Group, and it's like a lit... It's so... His portfolio is like a who's who of bad companies. So they own SeaWorld. So they're dolphin abusers. They own Motel 6, which just got fined $20 million for giving ICE their guest list without any warrants. They're giant Trump donors. They own multiple companies in Brazil that have been actively burning down portions of the rainforest. Mm-hmm. And they also bought the mortgage to the World Trade Center like 10 months before 9/11. So it's just like every possible conspiracy theory the Blackstone Group is involved in. And it
also
it
they're
sounds
called
like
the Blackstone group, which is like that's who is like trying to murder Jason Bourne.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Wes Edens is from a firm called Black Rock.
Oh, you mean Wes Edens from the Sex Dungeon lawsuit?
From the Sex
Dungeon. That's how I know him. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so his firm got 50% of their startup from Blackstone. So it's a lot of guys who are really connected to each other too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of for sure. I totally agree, and I think you could probably find if you put them on a map, right? Like mm-hmm. you'd find that they're in the same place at the same time. A lot of MBA, a lot of these people who run this small group of firms, and many of them have overlapping business interests with Trump.
Well, and then also,
and a lot of them are from Wharton, so
yeah.
It makes
a lot of them are from Wharton. A lot of them, yep.
And then also, don't forget, Ghislaine Maxwell was on Paul Allen's boat.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Oh my god.
My favorite of these shady owners is Gail Benson. Because her crimes are low level, or quote unquote alleged crimes are so much lower level than these guys, but they're still bad. So Gail Benson, the owner of the Saints, was involved in 20 civil lawsuits over a 13-year period starting in 1987 for her home renovation business.
What?
Yeah, at one point she was arrested and charged with theft of furniture from a client. She had both state and federal tax liens against her business for failure to pay taxes. And then also in 89, Gail Bird Interiors the employees filed lawsuits against her because she refused to pay them and was settled out of court. And also Tom Benson's personal assistant sued her for being a racist against him. He was an African American man. Sure, it's not junk bond sales and Jeffrey Epstein, but even the widow of a rich man is not necessarily a very good person, is all
what,
I want to
what happened with the lawsuit, the racism lawsuit?
They settled out of court.
Okay. Wow, but Anthony Davis is the jerk, right? Because he wanted to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right. She's just a good testament that you don't actually have to have a rich father to commit terrible crimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you can build yourself up into those felonies by your bootstraps.
Okay, actually, yeah. I have that wrong. So an NFL, you know, very the you know who are cleaner than the courts. You know, the NFL, they should definitely be arbitrating laws and racism lawsuits.
For sure.
Ruled in favor of Henry against the Saints on the labor complaint and gave him overtime pay and a contractual payout for his dismissal and attorney's fees, but against Henry on the claims of racism, which I'm sure had nothing to do with the fact that maybe that would taint an NFL owner.
yeah. Wow. That's a good one. I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah. Anyway, billionaires.
What about the Kushner family?
Oh, well, what about the Kushner family, Henry?
They own part of the Grizzlies.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
and they might be some of the most aggressive slumlords in America.
Yeah, and know about the whole diner thing, right?
I don't think I do.
I don't think I do either.
So this is one of the great stories. Something was happening where like Chris Christie as U.S. attorney in New Jersey was investigating some Kushner family business. And there was the suggestion that maybe some members of the family were participating or helping him along. And there was a lot of anxiety about this. And at some point somebody wants to deliver a message to somebody. And anyway, like Charles Kushner, Jared Kushner's dad ended up going to prison for this. But the thing he did was, arranged for a prostitute to show up at the diner that his, I forget, someone, one of his relatives frequented this diner, had a prostitute meet him, and then eventually she lured him into a nearby motel where there were hidden cameras, and then he delivered the video of that to that man's wife, who I think it was Charles Kushner's sister, and in kind of a blackmail effort.
To try to get him not to testify, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, and the great thing is, it's called the Time to Eat Diner, which is such a wholesome name.
It's right near where I live, to be honest. I've driven by the Time to Eat Diner 1,000 times.
It looks kind of good, I have to say.
I've never been in, to be honest. My wife went to a meeting there once, and I was like, ooh, I don't know.
It feels like it's like eating at the restaurant Rick Pitino had his affair in. You know what I mean? Where just like it doesn't matter how good the food is.
Oh, yeah. Basketball has so many sordid characters. Oh, my God. The hell?
And then we also, of course, have not mentioned the war criminals, the DeVosses. We don't even need to really get into that, but...
It's so elaborate that, like, even their primary, like, legit business is super shady.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. Amway is one of just the... the fundamentals of the company, the upfront parts of the company are terrible.
Amway is and both then there's somehow also... a cult and a pyramid scheme.
Uh-huh.
Clever.
And it's like, yeah, private mercenary force. Why not? Diverting public education money to private schools. And just they appear to be just loathed in the state of Michigan at this point, and yet are still just giant donors. Mm-hmm. So,
well, they've been funding some of these, people with guns hanging around state capitals, right? Like they've funded some of the protests. Absolutely crazy. And I don't know, this is a fun little like riddle me this, but when Eric Prince testified in before, I think a House Intelligence Committee, you can read the transcripts. I take it back. It wasn't a House. It was a Senate. Anyway, he has testified in a way several times in this sort of whole Trump, Mueller, et cetera. But, some of them you can read online, and there's a part where they say, look, you need to turn over all of the communications you have with Russians. And he says, okay. Now, he's known as like a guy who travels with arms and all sorts of nefarious military things. And he turns over 20-odd emails with the then – like high-ranking executive of the Brooklyn Nets, Christophe Charlier.
Oh.
Who's not actually Russian.
Yes.
But he did have a board seat on Rusal, which was kind of like Prokhorov owned part of Rusal at that time and had a board seat, and Christophe held his position or whatever. But yeah, so to Eric Prince, this was the Russian that he knew. It was like another NBA guy. So this is like it's NBA on both sides of this deal. Mm-hmm. And then Rusal ended up being involved in, we don't have time.
You know what? I think that's the perfect place to end our segment here. Henry.
Killed it.
Thank you so much for coming on. Everyone, subscribe to TrueHoop.com. Is there anything else you would like to plug?
Oh, like a brand of underwear I really enjoy.
Yeah, whatever you want to do. It's totally up to you. We're comedians, so it's all about plugs, at the end of a
plugs
show.
Plugs are great. Yeah. Oh, I wish I were ready to really.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I got one. So, do you guys know who David Epstein is?
No.
David Epstein, he's absolutely brilliant. He's the author of Range, a recent bestseller, and his earlier book was The Sports Gene. He's literally one of the sports
I books. Did read The Sports Gene. Yes, okay. Yeah.
So that's the first plug, but it's a Russian nesting doll of plugs because I know David personally and we run together sometimes and he's very level-headed, brilliant guy, but he loses his mind for Task Performance Wear, TASC. I am not getting paid for this. But he's like, this is like you can get really sweaty in it and you don't smell bad. So if you go for a run and then you have to duck into the store or whatever, you're not going to offend anybody. And he was telling me it's made in New Orleans out of some weird, like I think it's made of bamboo and something else. And so he gave me the hard sell. And eventually I bought like a shirt, and true enough, amazing. And then for Father's Day, I got a pair of shorts, and now I'm like, this is what I want to plug. Yeah, I don't know. It's made out of the future. I don't know what the fabric is, but it's extremely comfortable and it just doesn't stink. So how about that? There's a plug.
It's a great plug.
Awesome. Yeah.
Sean.
Well, we feel like a real podcast because we did that.
Yeah, I feel good.
That's perfect. Thanks so much for coming on, Henry. We'll have you on anytime you want to talk.
Yeah,
about anything. Come, just let us know. Our door is open for old True Hoop Henry. Thanks a lot.
Wait till I do 90 minutes on performance wear.
Yeah, we're gonna get to the bottom of Sweatwick technology next.
We are. All right, thank you guys.
Thanks,
Henry. Take care.
That was Henry, and that was Tillman Time. And that's our show. Sean, anything you want to plug?
Any lifestyle brands? I personally work out wearing some basketball shorts that I bought from Ross Dress for Less in San Francisco something like 15 years ago. They're not attractive, but have they fallen apart once? No. I've gotten so much use out of these $9 basketball shorts. And also I have an article, I'll have a thing on Yardbarker, a what if about, if the Clippers had not traded the number one pick that became Kyrie Irving. And then later this week, I'm going to have a piece about the weirdest deferred money contracts in sports in honor of Bobby Bonilla Day.
Mm-hmm. Great. And then as for me, you can always follow me on Twitter at Frankie Muniz, where I haven't tweeted in quite a while, and frankly, it's making me nervous. but on May 25th, I tweeted, "It's going to be 112 degrees on Friday." I almost forgot, Sean. Did you write a song tonight?
Yeah, this is the first time. I can't believe it's taken this long. I wrote a song about my other favorite NBA writer besides Henry Abbott.
Brian
Windhorst. Well, not writer, NBA expert.
Yeah.
It's about Brian Windhorst. Yeah. and it's called Aggregate.
Great. Trust the process.
Trust the process.
And shut it down. Let's go to Fertittaville with the Maceo family.
Yeah, horse.
It was a trade deadline. Shams in the panic room. Wendy was on the set trying to pursue some news on the deals so I can get some scoop. Never will reveal the J.R. Smith soup.
Just watch Kenny and Chuck on TNT on a mission trying to find Mr. Windy B. About to drink one third of an MGD. Zillow's great in sources anonymity.
So I grabbed my phone while Rachel was debating. I hit the wrong button and it started updating. I look at the screen, said 4% done. I turned to Bond Temps and said, damn, I'm sunk.
Trying to think of 10 more things that I think I like. Windy's phone is crashing like Jay Williams on a bike, onto bigger, better things than court design. Get my old BlackBerry and put it online.
I'm getting scooped, I'm losing to Chris Haynes, I'm disappearing. Just like David Blaine, I'll lose my job, I'll lose my shoe deal. I look up and Woj says they're trading Bradley Beal.
They got Wendy freezing up and Paul Pierce is around. Gonna jump in there and bust like Kwame Brown. Drop an analytic knowledge about team rebound. And I fell asleep trying to watch Black Hawk Down.
They got sources with sources, the trade is going down. It don't make sense, the cap is going down. To Omaha I'll fly, it's a panic attack. They look to the wings and I see my homie Zach.
Salaries don't match, don't have the cap space. CBA rules up. About to put egg on Woj's face. Joe Harris texted me, he's gonna sign for eight. Z-Low and Windy B are gonna aggregate.
Funny story, when Jerome James hit me in the face with a basketball, Michael McDonald, help me up.
I took him to the low post, I let my notebook explode. Now I'm switching my mind back into beer mode. Everyone on the jump knows they got wrecked. So I grab a German beer, I say, what up, Bex?
Now Zach grabbed a beer, he'll only drink half. But before my home died, I had news about Shaq. Shut up, do not blog. Don't want you to quote me, ain't heard it from Windy.
Forget what you heard, I'm still a stat nerd. But I love watching film the most. It's how I spend my time when I'm on the Croatian coast. Think
talking about Luke Walton on Stars. I thought, ooh, I'm changing that name because they got me tooed and they don't coach good. It's just not the same. I got a belly full of hops and I'm away from my spouse. The next stop is Kevin Arnowitz's house. Zach, you know what I keep forgetting? How delicious a Sunbasket meal can be, cooked in your own home. They deliver it right to your house. I'm tweeting, but only cause they make me. Don't understand a single Drake meme. Makes me feel like I have a brain tumor. A rumor is a fact, and a fact is a rumor. Quotes, facts, reacts, commentary. Where truth is checked, and blue checks give truth. If you know Lexi Lowe, you don't want to step to this. It's the Low Post Era, podcasting about Luka Doncic. And if you drink like I drink, then there's Sam Adams in the fridge. And if your wife is Croatian, then never talk about your kids.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.